Welcome to Verity Wealth Report with Stephen Ting from Verity Wealth Group. Planning for your financial future means navigating challenges like market volatility, inflation, and retirement income. Verity Wealth Report is here to help by addressing common financial concerns, sharing valuable strategies, and exploring ways you can work toward your financial goals. Now let's get started with Verity Wealth Report.
Hello and welcome to the Verity Wealth Report. My name is Stephen Ting from Verity Wealth Group. If you'd like more information about what you hear during our show today, give us a call at 626-650-9486 or visit us online at veritywealthgroup.com. And while at my website, click on the radio page to check out our past shows and to subscribe to our program on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon Music. Today, we'll be talking about the behaviors that could quietly undermine everything you've worked so hard to build, some of which catch people off guard once they get into retirement. We're going to walk through seven investment behaviors that, according to a recent article from Kiplinger, tend to hurt retirees the most. And what makes this conversation worth having is that these aren't obscure technical mistakes. They're patterns that can feel completely reasonable in the moment, but that could add up to real costs over time. Throughout the episode today, we'll be drawing from that same Kiplinger article titled "These Seven Investment Behaviors Hurt Retirees the Most, But It's Not Too Late to Change Your Ways." And I'm once again glad to have my co-host, Jacqueline Gladhill, here with me today.
Stephen, that was amazing. You said, "I'm so glad to have Gladhill on the show today." See, look at you. That is hilarious. Well, thank you for having me. And I mean, Stephen, I'm really looking forward to this one. You know, I think a lot of people assume that the hardest part in saving for retirement. But it sounds like what you do is, you know, once you get to retirement, it carries its own set of challenges.
It really does. And one of the things that makes this stage different is that the margin for error is smaller. During your working years, if you make a financial misstep, you've got time and income to recover. But in retirement, that cushion shrinks. And that's really why behavior matters so much here. According to research from Morningstar that's cited in this article, behavioral mistakes could cost investors an average of 1.2% annually. That might not sound dramatic, but over a long retirement, that drag adds up. The encouraging news is that some of these mistakes are behavioral, which means they can be addressed. So let's work through them. The first behavior is holding too much cash out of fear.
Ooh, and this is a good one. I mean, that one does surprise me a little bit. You know, cash does feel safer, at least to me. So what's the problem with it?
Well, that's exactly the intuition, and it's understandable. After decades of being told to save and protect what you've built, having cash on hand feels like doing the right thing. And to be clear, keeping an emergency reserve is prudent, but that's not the issue. The issue is when fear pushes a large share of your portfolio into cash for years at a time. Because what's potentially happening in the background is that inflation is slowly eroding what cash can buy. And after taxes, a lot of cash yields can struggle to keep pace with inflation. So what feels like protection could actually be a slow, quiet loss. The approach that could work better is defining a clear purpose for cash. Kiplinger notes that many financial services professionals suggest holding 1 to 3 years of planned spending in cash or short-term bonds, then investing the remainder with long-term goals in mind. The key idea is that when cash is tied to a specific time horizon, it could do what you actually want it to do, which is reduce anxiety rather than amplify it. Cash without a defined purpose has a way of growing larger and larger until it's doing more harm than good.
Well, Stephen, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's the difference between really a strategy and just a feeling.
I agree. And that distinction runs through almost every behavior on this list. The second one is timing the market instead of staying invested.
Oh, Stephen, this one comes up a lot, especially when markets get rocky. And I mean, right now.
All the time. Yeah, I agree. All the time. Selling after decline could feel protective in the moment, but it can feel like you're doing something smart. In practice, it often locks in losses and increases the potential of missing the rebound. There's research from Hartford Funds cited in this article that found missing the 10 best days in the market could reduce returns by more than half. 10 days out of years and years of investing, that's how significant the cost of market timing could be. If you genuinely want to reduce risk, adjusting your allocations deliberately can serve you much better than jumping in and out based on what's dominating the news cycle. And let me add an important note here that volatility is not the same thing as a permanent loss. They can feel identical in the moment, but they're different things. Retirement planning is largely about avoiding the combination of a portfolio decline and forced selling at the wrong time. Those two things together are what can create lasting damage. A decline you ride through could be very different from a decline you lock in.
Well, and that means it's less about what the market does and more about what you do in response to it.
That's a really good way to put it. Yeah, your behavior during volatility matters enormously. And we'll come back to that idea when we get to behavioral number 6. But first, number 3, ignoring tax efficiency in withdrawals.
I see a common theme here, and this one feels like one people, you know, might not think about until it's too late. I mean, taxes are a huge aspect.
It is, and that's part of what makes it so costly. Not all retirement dollars are taxed the same way. Money in taxable brokerage accounts and traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs behave differently when you take it out. And the order in which you draw those accounts down could also have a significant impact on what you actually keep after taxes. So a general approach that works well for some retirees is to start with taxable assets, then coordinate tax-deferred withdrawals, and then try to preserve Roth flexibility for later years when possible. That kind of sequence could help reduce lifetime taxes over a long retirement. But the right approach is personal. There's no single answer that works for everyone because everyone's income mix, account balances, and family situations are different. What potentially matters is having a plan in place before required minimum distributions kick in and before Medicare premium surcharges start complicating the picture. Waiting until those things arrive to think about tax strategy could leave fewer options on the table.
Well, so Stephen, when you say RMDs and Medicare premiums complicate things, what do you mean by that exactly?
Great question. The article explains that required minimum distributions are withdrawals the IRS requires you to take from tax-deferred accounts once you reach a certain age. They're mandatory, and they count as taxable income. If you haven't thought ahead, those distributions could push you into a higher tax bracket. And because Medicare Part B and Part D premiums are income-based, higher income in retirement could mean higher premiums as well. Accordingly, the planning you do or don't do in your early retirement years could have ripple effects a decade down the road. Even a fairly simple plan could be meaningful here. Decide in advance which accounts are for baseline spending and which are larger one-time expenses, and which are the long-term backstop. Having that structure in place can give you something to work for rather than making those decisions under pressure.
All right, Stephen. So that makes sense. And that's number 3, right? So what's number 4?
Chasing yield without understanding the risk. This one could be especially tempting when interest rates are low or markets feel uncertain. A high distribution rate looks appealing, and it looks like stability, but yield is not a free lunch. In terms of fixed income, prioritizing yield without understanding what's underneath could mean taking on credit risk, interest rate risk, or concentration risk that doesn't reveal itself until things go wrong. And in investing, things tend to go wrong at the worst possible time. A more durable lens is total return. Income matters, but so does the stability of principal and the tax treatment of what you receive. The article helpfully points out that if a holding described as high income could drop 20% in a bad year, that income may not be the safety net it appears to be. The goal is reliable funding over the long run, not just a high distribution rate in the short run. Those two things are not always the same.
Yeah, and it sounds like the headline number can mask what's really actually going on underneath it.
I think you nailed it there. It's a good reminder that in investing, when something looks significantly better than everything else, there could be a reason. The question is whether you understand that reason and whether you're comfortable with the potential trade-offs it represents. Now, before we keep going, let me give out our contact information. Remember, you can always give us a call at 626-650-9486 or visit us online at veritywealthgroup.com. Scheduling a consultation is always easy, and we're always happy to work around your schedule.
Thank you, Stephen. Now, I like number four, but what is behavior number five now?
Failing to rebalance consistently. This one is quieter than some of the others, but it may not feel like a decision, which is part of what makes it easy to overlook. But without rebalancing, risk drifts in ways that may not be immediately obvious. After bull markets, portfolios could become more stock-heavy than you intended. After downturns, some people find themselves more conservative than their plans calls for. Either way, what you thought you had in terms of risk exposure may no longer match what you actually have. Research from Vanguard cited in this article suggests that systematic rebalancing could help maintain intended risk levels and improve outcomes over time. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Some retirees rebalance annually or whenever allocations drift past a predetermined threshold. Set the threshold, set a reminder, and then make it routine rather than reactive. There's also a practical connection to withdrawal strategies here. If you're regularly pulling money out of the portfolio for living expenses, those withdrawals could be used to rebalance in a tax-aware way. For example, drawing from an overweighted area to fund spending potentially reduces the need for separate rebalancing trades. It's a way of accomplishing two things at once.
Well, and in the end, rebalancing and the withdrawals don't have to be separate decisions. I mean, they could potentially work together.
They could. And that kind of coordination can come from having a plan where all the pieces talk to each other rather than managing each piece in isolation. Behavior six is overreacting to short-term news. And this circles back to what we talked about earlier with market timing.
All right. Well, this one feels human. It's hard not to pay attention to what's going on or what's happening in the markets.
It is completely human. And the article acknowledges that directly. Retirees who monitor their portfolios daily could feel more stressed and make more reactive decisions. That's not surprising. And when you're watching something move, the instinct is to respond to it. Now, an approach that could be more practical is to establish a consistent review schedule, something like quarterly or semi-annual check-ins, and pair that with a written plan that spells out what you'll do during periods of volatility. The article specifically mentions a written investment policy statement as a tool that could provide that type of structure. It can give you something to return to when emotions are running high. A set of decisions you made when you were calm and those that can guide you when you're not. The goal is to make decisions when you're clear-headed. If you find yourself wanting to do something because markets are down, that's generally a signal to return to the plan first and ask whether anything fundamentally has changed. Most of the time, it has not. Most of the time, the right answer is to stay the course.
Well, and that's the value in having a document that you created during a calm moment that you can refer back to when things feel uncertain. I mean, Stephen, you know how it is. When you write it down, it's set in stone, right?
Good way to put it. Yeah, it's almost like a letter to your future self that spells out what I believe. Mm-hmm. Here's what I've decided, and here's what I'll do and what I won't do. Having that in writing potentially takes a lot of pressure off in the moment. And that leads to number 7, which is neglecting to adjust your strategy over time.
Mm-hmm. And this one seems like it could really sneak up on people. You know, your situation changes, life happens, but your portfolio doesn't. Oops.
And that's exactly what can happen. The portfolio that made sense at 65 may not be the right fit at 75 or 85. Time horizons can change, spending needs can change, health can change, and the allocation that was appropriate at one stage of retirement may carry too much or too little risk at a later stage. There are general rules of thumb for this. The article mentions one called the 100 minus your age rule, which gives you a rough idea of how much to hold in stocks versus more conservative investments. Rules like that are blunt, and the article acknowledges as much, but the underlying idea is useful. Revisit your allocations periodically and adjust them based on what your actual cash flow needs look like now, not what made sense 5 or 10 years ago. Could also help you revisit what different parts of the portfolios are meant to do. Now, some assets are great for spending, some are for legacy, and some are meant to serve as a buffer against the possibility of a very long life. Now, those rules can shift as time goes on, and the allocation should be able to shift with them. What that could look like in practice is a periodic review, maybe annual, where you sit down and ask some honest questions. Has my spending changed? Has my health changed? Do I have more or less time horizon than I thought I did a few years ago? Are the goals I had when I first retired still the same goals? Retirement isn't a fixed destination, it's a moving one. And the plan should move with it.
Yes, and it sounds like retirement isn't a set it and forget it situation. You know, unlike some other parts of our automated lives.
Yeah, not at all. And I think that that's one of the most important things we could say today. People spend decades focused on accumulation, on building the nest egg. But managing that nest egg through retirement could require ongoing attention and a willingness to adjust as life changes. And here's where I want to bring this all together, because all 7 of these behaviors share a common thread.
I can picture where this is going, but what's that, Stephen?
Having a plan and staying committed to it. And also having someone in your corner who can help you do both. Because what the research behind this article makes clear is that the biggest risks retirees face can often be behavioral. They're not about picking the wrong stocks or missing a market trend. They could be about holding too much cash because it feels safe, or selling when fear takes over, or not rebalancing when because it never felt urgent, and not adjusting as life changes. Each of those behaviors on its own can seem manageable, but they could compound. And in retirement, when there's less time and less income to recover from mistakes, compounding errors matter more.
And this is where working with a financial services professional could really change the equation.
It could, because in my opinion, an experienced financial advisor isn't just about helping you picking investments. They could help you stay the course when your instincts are telling you to do something else. They could be checking in periodically to make sure your allocation still reflects where you actually are in life and not where you were when you first retired. That kind of ongoing relationship could be worth a great deal, not just in terms of outcome, though research suggests that that could be meaningful, but in terms of sense of security. Knowing that someone is watching the big picture alongside you, that you're not navigating this alone, potentially changes how you experience retirement.
I really like that, Stephen, and that matters just as much as the numbers.
You hit the bullseye with that comment. And finally, the article actually closes with a simple framework that I think is worth sharing. Set a cash reserve that matches real spending needs. Commit to an allocation you could live with during a downturn. And build a withdrawal plan that considers taxes. Rebalance on a schedule. And review your portfolio less often than your emotions may want you to. That last one's harder than it sounds, but it can be important. And if you were to do just one thing, I'd suggest writing down the plan while markets are calm and then use it as your decision filter when they're not. That's simple advice, but it could be powerful. Having a written plan can be what separates people who stay the course from people who don't. If any of this resonates with where you are right now, or if you'd simply like a second set of eyes on your retirement plan, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 626-650-9486. Or again, visit us online at veritywealthgroup.com and you can schedule a complimentary consultation there.
Well, thank you, Stephen. And I just want to do a quick recap before we go today. You know, we talked a lot about the seven investment behaviors that could be hurting retirees, you know, and those are holding too much cash out of fear, timing the market instead of staying invested, ignoring tax efficiency in withdrawals, the chasing yield without understanding the risk, failing to rebalance consistently, and overreacting to short-term news, and then neglecting to adjust strategy as your life changes. Because you're right, life happens. So thank you, listeners, and everyone who is listening today.
We'll see you guys next week for another episode of the Verity Wealth Report. Take care, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for Verity Wealth Report. Don't head into retirement without a plan for both your finances and your health. For more information, contact Stephen Tink at Verity Wealth Group at 626-650-9486 or visit veritywealthgroup.com. Join us again soon for another episode of Verity Wealth Report.
Stephen Ting offers investment advisory services through Gradient Advisors, LLC, Arden Hills, Minnesota, 877-885-0508, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Gradient Advisors, LLC, and its advisors do not render tax, legal, or accounting advice. Verity Wealth Group is not a registered investment advisor and is independent of Gradient Advisors, LLC. Insurance products and services offered through Stephen Ting, independent agent. Verity Wealth Group, Stephen Ting, and Gradient Advisors, LLC are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any government agency. This program is produced by Luson Media. Stephen Ting compensates Luson Media for production services. Today's co-host is a salary employee of Luson Media, is not a registered investment advisor, and does not provide investment, tax, or legal advice. The information presented is for educational purposes only and should not be considered personalized investment, tax, legal, or financial advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Insurance products are offered through Stephen Ting as a licensed insurance agent and are separate from advisory services offered through Gradient Advisors, LLC. Before making any financial decisions, consult with qualified financial, tax, and legal professionals regarding your individual circumstances.